Today's guest is Kimberly Carlisle. She is an Olympian and Stanford graduate who advocates for human awakening to our impact on animals, the planet, and each other. Through writing, speaking, photography, and filmmaking, she tells stories that restore understanding, respect, compassion, and empathy among all beings. She is the co-founder, along with Flag the Horse, of Flag Ranch, a horse and human collaborative on the central coast of California.
Welcome to Interspecies Evolution. The purpose of this podcast is to highlight human consciousness and how our self-awareness can lead to our honoring animals as conscious beings as well. We have gathered more than 36 people with unique experiences and education, inviting them to share their journeys and how their relationships with animals have changed along the way. If you are seeking inspiration on your own journey of awakening, or simply want to improve your relationships with animals, we invite you to join us, because it is time for Interspecies Evolution. Here's your host, Jenny Jablonski.
Welcome to the show, Kimberly.
Thank you, Jenny. I am so honored to be here.
Well, I've been wanting to interview you for a while. In fact, ever since I had the idea to have this podcast, which is a bit of a stretch, I have to say, you came to mind as one of the first few people that I reached out to. And I'm so grateful that you're willing to have this conversation.
I'm in great admiration of your inspiration to do this. I think it's a powerful forum and it's an important portal place to have the conversations that we want to have on behalf of our fellow species.
I agree wholeheartedly. Just in case our audience doesn't know about you and your history, if you could share a little bit about your journey and what brought you to this place working with the horses in the way that you do.
Well, it's a story that's been easier to tell in essence as time has gone on and, you know, I've gained perspective. And the way I like to say it is I'm a retired racehorse. I spent most of the first several decades of my life in a swimming pool, racing and competing in South Florida. And there I would see my fellow thoroughbreds, same athletes, different species, training, racing, repeating, recovering, timing their splits, etc. around the tracks near my Florida home. Never went to the races, but could see them practicing and always felt like we were fellow athletes in different bodies. And I thought that was something obvious to everyone. And I didn't realize until I was in my 20s that it was maybe something special and I needed to pay attention to it. And at that point, I started seeing things in the racing world that I had felt weren't right for a long time and I didn't want to look. And I finally started looking. And by then, a horse named Flag had come into my life. I was actually in my 30s by then. He was off the track and together I felt like we were meant to do something. And without really knowing what, we just started taking in horses out of the thoroughbred business. And this was about 15 years ago. And here we are.
Can you speak to, I mean, I know you personally, the audience needs to know this. So I do know a bit about you personally. I've had several lengthy conversations with you, and I know you to be a very sensitive, intuitive person. And I know you also to work professionally in the corporate world. How do you manage both sides of your life? And can you share with us what your journey and honoring of yourself and your awareness of the animals, of humans as spirit in a body, how do you work that out?
Oh my gosh, that is a question, Jenny. I know one of the important parts of a conversation in this forum is to answer in essence. That has both depth and breadth in your question. It's something I'm still working on. I have this long career in writing and other communication, including visual photography and most recently a film. What's happening along with this parallel path of taking in horses and creating a ranch where the horses can live in herd and in sanctuary through the end of their life, preserving the bonds of those who come to us, the acknowledgement of their, you know, the vitality of their relationships, and then bringing people in to immerse with the herd and study and experience their intelligences and witness their communications in various forms. And so it all comes back to communication of across species, of human communication, but, you know, human communication leaning into the nonverbal, which we are so verbal and we don't necessarily tune, educate, validate the nonverbal energies that are present in the world, even though I think most people sense them. And so part of what the horses have brought to me is learning to dwell and work in the nonverbal communication arena. So I think that's an essential place where they've converged. And I think now for me, it's about, you know, bringing that experience and awareness back to communication forms that people can receive, spoken, written, etc., to both share the knowledge and intelligence of the horses and to advocate for them.
Well, I know how important that is because there are probably many listeners right now that are feeling the nudge, feeling a pull to something different, but they don't know what it is necessarily. So many of us sort of trip and fall into a spiritual journey or trip and fall into honoring the animals. It's not necessarily purposeful. We're guided, but there's nothing around us. There's nothing about our life that says, I'm going to wake up tomorrow and make different choices. And the way I talk to people and the way I communicate with animals and the way I utilize the animals in my life or work with the animals in my life is going to be completely different. It does seem to be a circuitous journey for most of us. So I feel that the communication, as you just so eloquently put, is vital to help people understand that there are opportunities, there are other avenues, and there are educational opportunities as well.
Gosh, you know, so many people come to the ranch and are just so deeply moved by all they sense and experience. And I think we give ourselves the space and time to pause. And I think those calls, as you've noted, are given some room to come forward and maybe we'll listen and maybe even we'll act on them or think to inquire further what is being spoken in the quiet of our being when we allow ourselves to be quiet. You know, sometimes it takes us moving as physical beings into a quieter spaces. And I think that's why anywhere we can find that, and also the call to the natural world for those who are listening, whatever form that might take, you know, just to go be near the ocean or to go for a walk outside, to go for a hike, to spend time with animals, to more intentionally spend time with animals in whatever form that takes. I think it's there for all of us. And one of my favorite, I don't know if I made this quote up or somebody I know said it, but one of my favorites is, at the root of our dis-ease and our disconnection is our separation from the natural world.
Right. The separation from ourselves as infinite beings of light, where all of our wisdom is held. That wisdom, the balance, the partnership, the mutual understanding. That sparks me to recall a time when I was at your ranch, and I think it was a day or a day after where the farrier was coming, and I remarked, well, if you have all these horses out in the field, who goes out and catches the horses to bring them up for the farrier? And you said, Ginny, I don't have to catch the horses. Why don't you tell the story?
Our farrier goes into the herd and brings them there, which is very unusual. And he was an exceptional practitioner. It's interesting you remember that because I think he arrived, to your point made just a few minutes ago, I think he arrived at a place in his life where he, after spending a time in industry and elsewhere and also developing his expertise as first a shoer and then a barefoot trimmer, he tuned to the animals more and more. And the more he tuned, the more he moved toward working with them in a way that was most in their environment. So he would literally, you know, as opposed to having to get them out of their environment and bring them into something that we create that's convenient for us, he would move into theirs and work among them. He was a very wise, wise man, but it was a long journey to also, one of your points so beautifully made, a long journey to his discovering that. But he did. And it has brought him joy and enabled him to trim and care for other animals, including donkeys and such, in, you know, in ways that might not have been possible otherwise, because he moved into working with them in their environment.
That's beautiful. Now, if I might add to your story, from my recollection, your response to me was, the night before the farrier comes, I set my intention. I let the herd know the farrier's coming. And whomever needs to be trimmed needs to come to the fore, come to the front. And I wake up the next morning and those horses who need their hooves trimmed are always standing near the gate.
That is true as well. Thank you for reminding me. It's been a practice to develop that first acceptance that the way animals communicate, at least one way they communicate, and we have Temple Grandin to thank for this, at least from my understanding of it, was her beautiful work on showing how we communicate, they communicate in pictures. And so they often can read our intention by the pictures we're holding in our mind, consciously or unconsciously. So I was intrigued by that, also taking it back to my athletic days. As I got a little farther in my career, I had a very wise coach in my dad, and we explored everything from mental rehearsal of our swimming events to, you know, utilizing other kinds of imagery and soothing colors and meditative techniques to calm nerves, et cetera, before racing. Utilizing that, I kind of merged it together and thought, okay, I'm going to start communicating to the horses what is happening, when, for how long. In the case of, say, trailering, if we needed to trailer someone somewhere, where they were going, why, and when they would arrive, what it would feel like. So it was as much a mental picturing as a feeling in the body to hold, a peaceful feeling in all these cases, because we wanted them to know they were in good hands, they were being cared for, et cetera. And that was very powerful. The other thing that your memory brings to mind is that for a few of our lucky horses, they have been placed with us, and the people who have loved them have come to see them. And it's usually fairly spread out, but when they've come, I've always said kind of out loud and with fun, you know, so-and-so is coming tomorrow, but I've held the picture, and they're waiting at the gate the next day when their person arrives.
Often in introductory intuitive or energetic awareness classes, I try to impress upon people how much more believable it is for us when we can feel it, sense it, or see it. And so the degree of belief, the degree of intention that we hold in sharing the pictures, sharing the visualization, absolutely impacts whether they receive it as well or not. And so I really honor your confidence and your dedication to communicating with your horses. It's beautiful.
Thank you, Jenny. I read somewhere once, I think it was some beautiful books by an animal communicator I have her right here on my bookshelf. Kate Bellini Matelion, I think is how you say it. Well, one thing that I recall from the books is that, and it was one about conversation with horse, she called it, was that they ask that if we would only let them know what was happening, you know, in the case of horses who are bought and sold, horses who, for other reasons, change hands, horses who are performing and are being picked up the next day to go to the show. Now, if we were to only let them know what was happening, we only had the belief that it mattered to them, that we let them know what was happening, that would transform their world alone. And that really struck me. And the other thing that strikes me is, back to weaving in my athletic experience, I had my own personal experience of using mental imagery to train my mind as well as my body for a race and absolutely nailing the time I had envisioned to a hundredth of a second. I also knew another athlete, an Olympian, who was injured prior to the Olympic trials in her era and trained visually such that she had a few weeks to get back on her feet literally before the trials and still made the team. And she credits it to her mental rehearsal.
Well, I think if the public only knew what people do behind the scenes, extraordinarily successful people do behind the scenes to prepare themselves, I think people would be shocked to find out that people are using meditation, visualization, neuro-linguistic programming, hypnosis, and many other modalities. It's just not widely talked about. And then we idolize these people believing that they're different than we are, when in fact, we're all the same and we can all perform at any level we choose.
Another favorite author on this topic, Linda Kohanoff, talks about in one of her books, might be Writing Between the Worlds, is the other 90% that we as humans dwell in the 10% of verbal language, and we miss the rest. And that the leaders of, to your point, the real leaders are consciously working with the other 90%.
Absolutely. This brings to mind a memory a girlfriend shared with me once. From the time she was young and she couldn't say why she did this, and of course I know that it was her sole memory of doing this practice, when she got out of bed in the morning, as she was waking, she would visualize her day. Oh, I'm going to school. I'm going to soccer practice after school. I'm coming home. I'm having dinner. And then as she went on to college, I'm going to class. I'm going to a friend's house. I'm going to study group and I'm coming back to my dorm and everything is happening just as it should. I'm safe and I'm tucked in bed. And one day she was meant to go somewhere on an airplane in her 20s. And so she visualized getting up and packing her bag and getting to the airport, and she could get in the car, but she couldn't visualize arriving at the airport. And she didn't understand why, and she didn't think that was a message not to go. So she just thought there was something wrong with her vision, and she got in the car to go. And as she was in the car, she got a phone call that made her change her mind. So she never went to the airport.
Wow. So it's a blend of our intention with our visualization or our vision, and then some higher, I would say, you know, collaborative force, divinity, whatever it is that alchemizes or catalyzes the events of our lives. Something like that to me says there's something larger at work, and we sense that too, but we don't always know why.
How would you feel about my asking about your journey when you first started rescuing the horses, how your journey, how that developed? Because I'm wanting, if you're willing, the podcast is about consciousness and self-awareness and honoring that and sort of the messy way we get there. But it sounds to me like what you're saying, and I didn't know this, is you are already pretty darn aware because your dad helped you to explore your consciousness and your subconscious. And so it wasn't really a stretch for you.
You know, that's really accurate. I was blessed with a dad and the woman who raised me, who was not my biological mother, but was a gift to my sisters and me. And they were very open. My dad had Carl Sagan books around, and they listened to channeled entities. And I went to, you know, sessions where I observed and listened to channeled entities. There was Silva mind control, which is some of what we started to use in swimming. You know, I was super blessed with an openness in my household to larger energy than just our bodies, always having the ability to have wonderful conversations exploring. So super open house. So what a blessing. So yes, I think by the time the horses started to come, Flag being the first one, I was well along my path of awakening to other dimensions, certainly, as I noted from the time I was a child, having an affinity for other species, feeling like we're kindred spirits. I don't know when in my life did I really, maybe it was innate, you know, fully understood or fully felt that humans are just another mammal. I mean, yes, we have intellect, and yes, we have technology, and yes, we have thumbs, but that somewhere along the line, we got way out of whack about how human-centric the planet had become. And I always felt that I was partners, collaborators, fellow species on the journey with animals and the natural world. And so the horses, then, when they started to come into my life in, you know, a steady flow, which we took our, you know, I had Flag for a decade before we took in our first thoroughbred, additional thoroughbred. And at that point, I was starting to communicate with Flag, trying to find a deeper way to understand what the mission the two of us were meant to do together was. I felt it was something. As an athlete, even though I was open to these other realms, I was very grounded, but also very sort of physically bound. And, you know, really trying to listen to what it was that Flag was suggesting or offering, Flag the horse, was a deep sort of dig, as I would describe it for me, a deep sense of, I'm not sure what I'm hearing, but I feel something. We just need to get started. We just need to follow the clues, follow the open doors. There's a proverb that a wonderful friend of mine who's married to a Spaniard told me that it's a Spanish proverb, and I don't know how you say it in Spanish, but in English it means walking makes the path. And as I incorporated it as a nonprofit, I knew we were going to be taking in horses out of the thoroughbred business to start. I didn't really know what else we would be doing. I didn't have a business plan. I didn't have a whole bunch of money in the bank. People told me I was nuts. Some people left our enterprise because it was too scary to make these commitments to the animals without knowing how we were going to pay for them. And here we are, you know, 15 years later, we've cared for 70, 80 horses now. We have 53 on site. We have the minis. We have other species who I call the mascots, you know, pig, a goat, some chickens, dogs, cats, the wildlife. You know, every day I'm reminded to quiet in this place that, you know, requires so much hustle and physical work and creative work and fundraising work and communication work to keep it alive and thriving, to quiet myself and listen. What are the animals saying? That the animals are my collaborators in this. They're not my dependents. In some ways, they are leading this and we are just following. What do we want to be? Who do we want to attract to our circles in forms of other horses and other humans? It's a deep dig every day for me. I think there are people like you who have much more natural proclivity tuning to the other dimensions, into what, to be able to put words to what's being communicated, even if it's coming to you, not in words. So it's a daily growth opportunity for me. I'm speaking for me. I think a number of our teammates are along the spectrum of all of us, of being very physically oriented to being very tuned to the animals on other levels, which is beautiful to watch. And, you know, we're all growing toward that. I think the people who really thrive in this setting as team members have to be opening to that. And then I think the people who come here and feel so moved by their experience on the ranch are opening to that, or are already very open to that, just looking for a place to enact it or have a conversation about what else they want to do with that.
I'm so glad you brought up your team members, because that was going to be the subject of my next question. Not only team members, but I wonder if you could share what it's like from your perspective, watching the people come to the ranch and be transformed, whether it be people who volunteer, people you employ, whether it be contractors, whether it be your farrier, for example. That was a lovely story. What about the people who just sort of innocently stumble on your programs and they show up not knowing what to expect? And they do have profound experiences. What is it like being the person who is facilitating, who is fostering this environment?
Oh, well, that's a beautiful, beautiful question. And that sends me right into my heart. I think noting what I said previously about what it feels like to run a place like this every day, and then to be witness to the profound transformation, yes, but before that, even there's this, like, there's an awe, there's a, like, and I mean that in a deep sort of opening, sort of wow, it grows on them as we walk around and meet the animals and walk on the land. Rarely does anybody leave here who's not either smiling ear to ear or in tears in a beautiful way, not in a, you know, it does unlock things in our bodies and in our memories and in our hearts and in our minds and our dreams being here with the animals on the land. But I think largely it tends to be the more unrequited, joyful calling, dreams not yet manifested, joy. I mean, I've been fiddling with our, how do we describe ourselves? We've recently moved to this, our location here in Paso Robles, and it was a move to bring more people together with the horses in a way they could enjoy it as part of a larger, you know, experience or exploration of this area of California. And I really feel, in trying to get to essence about what it is we're offering, is the invitation to experience joy in life, in work, in your creativity, in your relationships, in just the way you reside on the earth. I think that animals, horses in particular, but you know, all animals are playful, and the horses are particularly so. And head to toe, I think what people are called to is the horses express, you know, there's a calmness and a groundedness and a centeredness, but there's also, like, I think the innate presence to the expression of play and joy is what we're drawn to in them. And I don't know that we recognize that. And when we come here, we see it. And sometimes it's unable to be articulated, but it's felt.
Well, that brought tears to my eyes too. And a story that I feel called to share about a time when I visited your ranch. It might have been the second time I visited you in Milton. I think I was there three times, and we've spoken other times as well. I was standing at the top of the hill, and I did share this with you. You may or may not recall it. A sorrel mare had been watching me for some time when I was down in the valley, and I had walked back up the top of the hill near the shade and was just sort of had my hands on this beautiful gruya, just amazing, I think, gelding. And I turned to leave. And as I was walking, and it was maybe 30 yards to the gate, the whole time I felt this sorrel mare just watching me and watching me intently. And I just kept walking to the gate because I didn't hear anything. I wasn't being called to do anything. And as the horse realized that I was just going to walk to the gate, she started walking to me and cut me off from exiting. And I said, yes, what can I do for you? And she said, follow me. And she turned around and walked me about 60 or 70 yards over to her companion, who was a paint mare. And she said, I will leave you now. And I stood with the paint mare and worked with her, and she shared with me some trauma that she had. And it was a very beautiful experience, but I was so struck by the fact, and this had never happened to me before, that a horse just came and ushered me to an animal that they knew I needed to talk to. And they knew that that animal would never step forward and ask on its own. Do you recall that?
Yes. And it also recalls there are many moments, not every moment, but many moments where we notice one of the animals, one of the horses shepherding another for something, whether it's to bring, I'm not kidding, bring an injured horse to the gate, for care, bring a horse in who needs their medicine in a bucket, to, you know, when we've had people come work with the horses with Reiki, which is an energy healing practice, to showing where on the body, one horse showing on another horse's body to the human practitioner where they need an energy work. Sometimes the horse that's being worked on can show with their nose where else something needs to be released. I mean, it's an amazing and beautiful mutual caring. I mean, you see it in when horses are allowed to live together, they mutually groom each other a lot. And there's a lot of mutual play and movement and moving each other around. And it's a very self-caring, community-caring action that is so present. And that's why I so love and value having the horses in herd, but also that people can come and observe, because they are a model to me of how we can be in human society.
Well, I don't think it should go without saying that horses were never meant to live in isolation, and neither were humans. In fact, I have felt very strongly for a very long time that the gift that horses were always meant to bring to humanity is to be an example of what balance can look like and feel like in relationship with another being.
That is so, so well said. And it brings to mind the way, again, bringing back my communication proclivities, if you will, I'll say skills, but proclivities, in trying to articulate for others why this, what's happening to horses and what the opportunities are now, is that, you know, we can look long back into centuries of where the horses partnered with humans for various outcomes, if you will, and some aren't pretty, you know, from war to the toil of building, etc. But now that, you know, we build and we have the engine, and the downside is horses have been marginalized. Their value and their role in our lives has been marginalized. But what we're seeing, you know, I would say in the last 4 or 5 decades now, is horses moving back as our partners, but as teachers, as models, as exhibitors of ways we could become more. From, you know, carrying handicapped riders, veterans, being sometimes the last collaboration that can unlock joy and soothe an autistic child, etc., to on-the-ground interaction that opens us up, our awarenesses, our observation of different styles of authentic leadership, of the value of building bonds based on respect and trust built over time, which is how they build their bonds. What a concept for our world now. All the beautiful ways they are still here patiently waiting for us to notice what they are offering.
Yes, I'm so happy that you were able to come and have this conversation with me today. And I know our listeners are going to be deeply touched by this conversation as well. I send you a tremendous amount of love and support and gratitude, and to your beautiful team members, Susan and the others. I am so grateful that you're doing what you're doing, and I encourage our audience, wherever they may be in the world, to visit programs such as yours, whether it be financially contribute or volunteer some manpower. I volunteer animal communication services across the world as well. It's a passion of mine. In closing, is there anything that you would like to share with people, where you're located, specifically what times of year do you offer programs and that type of thing?
Yeah, thank you so much for those beautiful words, Ginny. And, you know, this is a labor of love for me. I am the chief volunteer, and will continue to be that in some way, for certainly a steward for the rest of my life. And, you know, our move here to Paso Robles was to position us to be more accessible to people, and all the ways you've noted are ways to take part and to visit. We are really working on two things, you know, improving our site to be more welcoming and functional for people. It's fabulous for horses. and also to offer a number of different ways, different kinds of programs, different kinds of experiences where people can participate. Those are in development, but between our website and staying in touch with us on social media, which I know you're going to include as the information associated with the podcast, don't be shy about reaching out. That's the thing I always tell people. Don't be shy and let us know of your interest, and we'll figure out a way to get you here.
Thank you, Kim. I invite the audience to return next week to have another conversation with me, because now is the time for interspecies evolution. And remember, when you follow your heart, you lead with love. The information provided in this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional, medical, psychiatric, or veterinary advice. Our conversations are based on our life's experiences. We intend this podcast to be complementary and supportive. It is not intended to be a substitute for traditional medical, psychiatric, or veterinary care. If you need a doctor, a psychiatrist, or a veterinarian, please contact one immediately.